Peter, good morning.
Morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us here on the Daily Program this morning. Now, first off, really quite a basic question. It's been said that the definition that we use in criminology, the definition used in criminology of just the word gang, is being used incorrectly here. Do you mind enlightening us just to what the correct definition of gang actually is and why it's incorrect in this situation?
Certainly, Sean. Well, you wouldn't listen to politicians as experts on this sort of issue. They're opportunists in dealing with crime and justice. So you could almost completely disregard anything that they say from the Prime Minister down. They're not familiar with this area. But, you know, essentially, the best definition I find is from the National Institute for Justice in America. And just some of the characteristics of a real criminal gang is they've got rules for joining and operating. They meet on a regular basis. They provide protection of their members from others. They seek control over a local area, a geographical area, and they've got an identifiable structure. Now, they're just a few, but it's also other characteristics. They've got some permanence and some degree of organisation. Now, I've worked with criminal gangs in Victoria in the mid-70s, juvenile gangs, the West End Sharps. They had all those characteristics. So stealing cars two or three a night, every Friday night in the West End of the city near Southern Cross Station. But I got them into a football team and they're all tradies and, you know, none of them had any criminal convictions. So they were, I would say, a criminal juvenile gang. I've also visited those gangs in the United States, particularly in California, the Reds and the Crips. There's a movie made about it, Colors. And I, you know, have a pretty good understanding. What is happening with this group of young African and many of them Sudanese young people is that they are school friends, you know, and they associate together socially. There's a small number, probably less than 200, about 100, that have involved themselves in some serious crime, violence, carjackings, home invasions. Now, that cannot be dismissed, but they're doing that not in an organised way, on a spontaneous way, in the same way that teenagers organise their social activities. These kids, you know, really need some good intervention. They don't just need punishment. I've worked with juvenile offenders for 40 years, haven't been sitting in the university all that time at all. You know, if you do what Matthew Guy is saying and Peter Dutton is saying, the head of the Victorian opposition, Matthew Guy and Peter Dutton, you put them into institutions, teach them a lesson, you'll create criminals out them, and that criminal identity will last for 30 or 40 years in about 80% of the cases. So really what we have to say, what are we trying to do? We're trying to make the community safe, develop social cohesion, and also there's a degree of punishment and retribution for people who do wrong. But wrong steps at an early stage by incarcerating or drawing these young people, who mostly are still at high school, into the criminal justice system is the best way to produce a criminal identity and to have many hundreds, if not thousands, of victims in the future.
You mentioned a key word there, I think, opportunism, when it comes to the political field of this one. And it is quite intriguing to me when you mention examples from the United States as well. Obviously, the Crips and the Bloods that are over in the US, they are quite well-established gangs. But we've obviously seen a lot of scapegoating and a lot of controversy around other ethnicities being labelled Mexicans, I think, would be the most primary example I can think coming out of the United States, the rapists and the drug dealers crossing the borders. We see it here as well, this kind of scapegoating of minority groups. Just what kind of history does that really have, especially here in Australia?
Well, just to respond to the American example, President Trump's been saying that, you know, they're bringing criminals and rapists and druggists across the country, and particularly referring to El Salvadorians. Now, the criminal offence rate of El Salvadorians in the United States is below the average, far below the average. But the reason why the Deputy Commissioner has said it's above average here in Victoria, some African groups and some Sudanese groups, is because they are a recently arrived group in Australia. The same would have been said 10 years ago, you know, or 20 years ago with the Vietnamese and so on and so on. So in one sense, it's almost unavoidable to have a higher level of offending amongst a small group of a recently arrived cultural group, such as the Sudanese. how you respond to that, that's important. Your original question, though, you'll have to repeat just then.
Just about regarding the attitude towards minorities here in Australia and that scapegoating.
The background, really, it goes back to white Australia. It certainly has got its foundations in that. And we say that, you know, we're the best country to live, and to some extent we have less discrimination in Australia than many, many other countries. For the most part, we get on living with one another. But when something like this happens, opportunistic politicians, state and federal, I'm amazed that the Prime Minister and Peter Dutton are discussing this, but they're only doing it to give a kickstart to the Liberal opposition in Victoria, because there's an election here in Victoria. But, you know, really, federal politicians should be concerned with federal matters, and they should be providing resources, sometimes for better schools. The best way to respond to these situations would be to make sure that in every part of the state, in this case Victoria, but also New South Wales, that in the most disadvantaged areas you've got good high schools, good primary schools and good high schools. Because the worst thing some of these young kids who are committing crimes, some of them serious, that's different. They need specialist input from social workers and people. You know, there are tried and tested methods to solving those problems with people developing a criminal adolescent identity. But for the 90% of them, they're still in year 10. They have to finish year 12.
Mm.
And if they don't, they don't have a career path. Many of them need to go on to training after year 12, whether it be trade training in particular or university. That's the pathway to community cohesion and community safety. But to, you know, think mindlessly, I just had an encounter with the local Liberal member here in Victoria saying, no, we've been too soft on crime. You know, throughout the country, our prisons throughout the country have been increasing at four times the rate of the national population for 20 years. So it's just that there's no substance to the fact, despite what the tabloids say, that we're being soft on crime, because our prison population is increasing at this rapid rate compared to the national population. Now, as I might have said last week in the interview, that costs money to build and to maintain correctional institutions, and that money would otherwise come from health, education, transport, welfare, housing, the arts. So states don't have unlimited budgets. So your listeners, informed listeners, I would say, with 2SER, you know, they need to be very critical and suspicious of politicians talking about subjects that they know very little about.
Mm. And just as a final point there, Peter, I absolutely agree that politicians should probably have a lot of the words they say, maybe carelessly or for opportunistic reasons, hung around their necks. But I don't want to put it all on politicians. Just finally, speaking of the media, the tabloids you mentioned there and the way it's been reported in the media, how is it that we do see media reportage create a kind of toxic observer effect?
Well, generally, you can distinguish between different sources of media. I mean, you'll see different type of reporting in the Sydney Morning Herald and on the ABC than you would in many other sources of media in New South Wales or in Sydney. But, you know, it's popular. You know, the Telegraph and the Herald Sun here in Melbourne sell an extra 10,000-20,000 papers every day when they run a story like this. So their agenda is profit. Their agenda is not about community cohesion, community safety. It's about profit, and they can sensationalise these sorts of issues. But it's shocking when the Prime Minister and the Federal Minister, Peter Dutton, starts manipulating vulnerable groups in the community for political gain.
Well, Peter, thank you very much. Really do appreciate your time this morning. Really appreciate your insight into this one.
Thanks, John.